Mahalosa deals with other many, many different topics. But one of the interesting topics is the Nun Hafuchim, what they call the inverted Nuns. If you take out a Sefer Torah, I haven't actually seen it inside one, but I assume it's in there. But they have them, when you read the Parsha of the Shabbos, you'll see in their Chumashim, by I guess somewhere in the middle of the Parsha, when they read Vayehi b'msoa aro v'yoma Moshe, it's only like one or two psukim. So right before the parasha, they have an inverted nun. You'll see it in the actual chumash, and right at the end. So the question is, what's the inverted nun doing in the middle of the Torah for? We don't find anywhere else in all the five books of Moses, we don't find this inverted nun. So what's it doing there? So Rashi quotes an explanation there. He says, She'ein zeh mekomo. Rashi quotes him a medrash that says this isn't its rightful spot. In other words, it really doesn't belong here. These we'll see. It's about 85 letters. There's two parsha. What's the parsha right before it? What's the parsha right afterwards? So the parsha right before it is, it says Vayisu mehar Hashem, that they, it says they went, they left from Har Sinai. They left from the Har Hashem, the Mount of God. And the parasha right afterwards is the Jewish people are complaining about what's going on here. We should go back to Egypt. So Rashi says we put Vayihibim So'ar on the same passage we say when we take out the Sefer Torah. Every Shabbos or Monday and Thursday we read, it's the parasha when they used to travel with the Aaron. So why over here? We find many places, so Rashi says it's, is this in its place? He wanted to split up two separate prunias, two separate negatives. What were the negatives? So the negative was that it says Vayisu Mehar Hashem. So the Gemara Chazal tell us that what happened, what's wrong with traveling, leaving Har Sinai. So it says they ran, that the Jewish people, they ran away from Har Sinai, just like, you know, it's 12 o'clock, the bell's about to ring, and the kids are on the tip of the seats ready to jump out. So when school's over, the kids are running out of the room, running out of the building. The Jewish people at Har Sinai, it's Vayisu Mehar Hashem. They just took off. They ran away from Har Sinai. Like they couldn't get away quick enough. That's the criticized for that. And then the next parasha right afterwards is the Jewish people complaining, let's go back to Egypt, it's terrible there. So we find many places in the Torah that you have two negative things right next to each other. We never find inverted nuns in the middle. Why are these so bad? These two negative events. So the commentators point out is because these contradict each other. In other words, for instance, let's say you're running away from Har Sinai. So okay, so it's any time anyone's running. The question is, where you're running to? So, if they were taking off, they couldn't wait to get to Eretz Yisrael, they're running to get to the chosen land, okay, so that's not so bad. You're running from, in the morning from your house to shul, if you're running from one good spot to another, there's nothing wrong with running away. If the kids, you know, so, it's Vayisu Mehar Hashem. So the Jewish people were running away from Har Sinai, So you say, you criticize them. So say maybe they're running to Eretz Yisrael. So that's a good thing. But then right afterwards, what's the next psukim? It's a complaining. Let's go back to Mitzrayim. The Midbar is terrible. The whole, you know, you read the different psukim. We don't get any, the food's terrible, etc. Let's go back to Egypt. So this is what they call, there's a famous medrash with Yosef and his brothers. When Yosef was, revealing himself to his brothers, he says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. This is at the end in Parashas Vayigash. Vayigash, I love Yehuda. Yehuda is trying to appeal to Yosef to get Binyamin out of jail. And at the end, Yosef just can't take it anymore. And he says, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai. Is daddy still alive? So the question, the Medrash, the Beit HaLevi points out, the Medrash is, what was Yehuda doing this whole discussion? He's having a dialogue with Yosef in the past, who knows how long. He's talking about, my father is sick, I have to get Binyamin back. In other words, the whole conversation is about his old father. If you don't get me Binyamin, Binyamin's his favorite. So what's Yosef, what he was dreaming, Yehuda was dreaming, Yosef was dreaming through the whole conversation with Yehuda. Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, is daddy still alive? That's the whole discussion for the past couple of months was over our father. So obviously, so the Medrash says, yeah, of course he knew he was alive, but Yosef was really rebuking his father, his brothers. As the Medrash says, it says that he was saying, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. You're telling me, you just give me a whole long speech for the past couple of while. You're telling me how much you care about your father. Your father's old, he's sick, you need Binyamin. Tell it to the Marine. I need Yosef. I know what you, if you care about your father, you went to Soma, you went to treat me like you did in the whole parish of the Ishmaelim. So it's like an example they give, a parable, like a person in the school that used to give out lunch, not give out, you had to pay for lunch. So this person used to, whatever, plead poverty. He happened to come from a wealthy family, but let's say no one knew. And he used to plead every day, beg the person to let him in, and they used to have no money, this and that, and used to give him the lunches. So the kid's so used to making up the stories, now when he's at home, his mother's rebuking him about something, he goes into his whole charade about how, she said, what are you talking, I'm your mother, I know you have, you're living here in this mansion, and it's Ani Yosef, Oda Vichai, tell that story to someone else. I know you, if you cared about your father, you never would have done that. So, that's the difference between Musar and they say, it says, Aylan al Yom Hadin, Aylan al Yom HaTochecha. What's the difference in Yom Hadin and Tochecha and rebuke? Yom Hadin is the day of judgment. But Tochecha is when your act itself, inherently, you shrug yourself up. You know, I can't get up in the morning, it's too early, but when you want to speak to your girlfriend, you want to go on your ski trip, then all of a sudden you get up. In other words, your own actions. So that's what it says. Yosef is giving rebuke to his brothers, and they stood there in shame. It says, how much more so if the brothers couldn't answer Yosef? How much more so? What are we going to answer in 120 years? But what the commentator's point here is the reason why here it's so bad is because they could claim if you take the event by itself, it's neutral. But then if you go and look at another event, you see how it's totally contradictory. Like they say, Shalosh Shudas. It's called. You know, it's called Shalosh Shudas. Like, the third meal. So they point out is because, you know, today might be different. People might have three meals all the time, but it used to be. What's third meal on Shabbos? Because it used to be the norm was you had two meals a day. So now on Shabbos, you're eating a third meal. So the third meal, you just eat two meals, so there's nothing special about Shabbos. You have two meals every day of the week. But the third meal, it's like on the positive side, shows that all the meals you're eating are l'shem Shabbos. So and they have that principle out where your different actions show, you know, it's good or bad. It shows, so you could argue one point, but afterwards your actions contradict itself. So that's how Rashi quotes in the Medrash. However, the Gemara in Shabbos gives a totally different reason for the Nun Haf. So Rashi quotes the Medrash. It doesn't belong, but we're breaking up the two different portions of rebuke, because they contradict, but it looks too bad on the Jewish people, we just break it up. The Gemara in Shabbos gives a totally different reason. The Gemara in Shabbos says, you know what? We talk about the five books of Moses all the time, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, like we say on Leil Pesach, we read in the Haggadah, Chamisha Chumshei, we go through three of this, three Avos, four Imos. The Gemara tells us that's not true. It's a misnomer. There aren't five books of Moses. There are really seven books of Moses. What do you mean seven? Because the explicit to the Gemara says over the inverted nuns are teaching me that they're its own book. That basically you have Bereshis is its own book, Shmos is its own book, Vayikra is its own book, and Devarim. So that's four. Bar Midbar up until from the beginning of Bar Midbar to the beginning of the nun, the inverted nun, that's one book. The two lines with the in between the Nefilim is the sixth book, and everything that comes after that is the seventh book. So the Gemara learns out that from here that it's a new book. In fact, that's why I think they say there's eight. I didn't count them. I think there are 85 letters in these two psukim. And we learn out of halacha that if it's Sefer Torah, what's considered as something which has sanctity like the Sefer Torah. You know, a Sefer Torah that's ruined, so it has a certain level of Kedusha, like a tefillin that gets ruined, it's called Tashmishei Kedusha. But how many, let's say when a sofer starts writing, you have to start off with one letter. The letter, you have to start somewhere. So at what point of the writing does the Sefer Torah take on, do you have to finish actually the whole book? So the Gemara learns out to know that We see if you have 85 letters in the book, that's considered Kedusha Sefer. How do we know that? Because this book, the book of in between the inverted nuns, the tubes, that has 85 letters, and we consider it its own separate book. So they learn out from that that, you know, different halachas of the sanctity of a Sefer Torah. But from here, the Gemara learns out that there are even though we always say five, and the truth is we always call it the 24 books of Tanakh, but nevertheless, in terms of technically speaking, each one, it's never made it too poppy, even though the Gemara brings it down, it seems to be la halacha, but we always call it the 24 books and five books, but these are known as the seven books. So the question is, what do we usually have between the book of Bereishis and the book of Shemos, or between the book of Shemos and the book of Vayikra, what do we usually have to show it's a separate book? So there's usually, I think, about four blank lines in between the books of Genesis to Exodus. Like if you take out a Sefer Torah, when you finish the end of Vayichi, you'll see, I think there's four blank lines, and then they begin. And after every book. So the question is, so why not, if this is its own book, so why not, then we should open up a Sefer Torah, and there should be four empty lines. So that's what they point out. Instead of the four empty lines, they put it inverted nuns. Because there's another halacha, when you write a Sefer Torah, it has to be yafet. It's supposed to be, there's a hider mitzvah. And we're supposed to, like you buy a nice pair of tefillin, a Sefer Torah is supposed to be nice as well. So, how would it look? It doesn't make any. It would look, you know, very funny if you got the Aliyah and you're up there reading. Like, let's go see. You have four empty spaces. You have two little, probably one or two lines of a whole book. Then you have another four empty. It doesn't look good. In other words, part of the mitzvah writing a Sefer Torah has to look also. There has to be a certain type of hiddur mitzvah. So in order to avoid that it looking very silly, you have to all these gaps and spaces, and very little more gaps than writing. So therefore they had these inverted nuns that it should look better. In fact, interesting, they point out that really the first Tosus in Gittin writes that why is it that we have, they talk about a get. A get meaning when a person gets a divorce, you write the book of cutting. It's called Sefer Akrisis in the Torah. It's the book of cutting off when two spouses get a divorce. So the halacha is you need 12 lines on the get. That's the halacha. That there are 12, and so what's an allusion to it? So Tosis quotes one explanation, the word get itself. If you count up the numerical value of Gimel, which is 3, and Tes, which is 9, so it's an allusion. But Tosis quotes from Rav Sajagon another explanation. He says, get is called Sefer Kris. That's what the Torah, if you look in the end of, I think it's in Parashas Kisetze, if you look it up, it's Sefer, the book of Krisis, the book of cutting off. And so the Gaonim compare Sefer Krisis to Sefer Torah. They make an equation. So they point out that the book gets called the book and the Sefer Torah is called the book. So they say from the 12 empty spaces, because there's four blank spaces in between every Sefer, so from the 12 empty spots, that's how you get the 12. It's like there are 12 empty lines between the Sefer Torah, so therefore it's get.
When the Sofer writes the inverted nuns, does he turn the parchment upside down to write, and writes the nun right side up on an inverted parchment, or does he write it upside down on a parchment in which he's continuing the writing?
Right, it's a good question. I can only guess so since I'm not a sofer, but I would assume he probably leaves it the same way and makes it that way. That's my guess, but it's a good question to check into. I could find out from a sofer, but that'd be my guess, is he leaves it the same way and he writes it differently. Right. But the question, right, so I thought you were going to ask me another question, but the question is, but that doesn't make any sense what I just said.
Does it make a difference?
Well, if you turn the parchment around, then you're saying that the letter counts as a letter on itself.
Except it's inverted.
Yeah, so that by inverting it has In other words, you're making a statement of equality between the right side up text and the inverted text.
Right, it's an interesting question, right? So I thought you were going to ask, but I just said didn't make sense. Is really there should be 16 lines then, because between Bereishis and Shmos is 4, Shmos and Vayikra is 4, then Vayikra Bamidbar is 4, and Bamidbar Dvarim is 4. So that should be 16 lines on the get, not 12. So what's Rav Sajagon talking about, or Rav Haigon? So he already points out, so Tosfos answers with the Gonim, right, because he writes a lesson like, the gap between Bamidbar and Dvarim, Lo Choshev, isn't so important. Why? Because he says, Sefer Dvarim, the book of Dvarim, we know is known as the book of Mishnah Torah, which means the summary, literally, that's what the Rambam called his book. That's why many people didn't like the Rambam calling. The Rambam wrote a halakha with Yad Chazaka. He called it the Mishnah Torah, which is the name of Dvarim. So people didn't, he was saying, but he basically said, all you need is my book. I think they take out the 24 books of Tanakh and read my book. That's all you need. That's how the Rambam felt, or they say he. So people didn't like it, since it felt a little haughty, you know, saying like, so therefore, Klai Yisrael never accepted that name. In yeshivas, they all call it the Yad HaChazaka, Yud, meaning the 14, it's 14 different books. Yad is Yud and Vav, the Yad, Yud and the Dalet, so we call it, everyone calls it the Yad HaChazaka, because it, Klai Yisrael didn't like the name. It's, you know, I'm not saying what he meant by it, but it seems, you know, a little, they wanted a little more humbleness there, that all you need is my Sefer. You know, however he meant it, but we don't. So, but that, the Dvarim is the real Mishnah Torah, or the original Mishnah Torah, I should say. So he says, Lo Choshev, we don't count the four lines between Bamidbar Dvarim, because Dvarim is only a repeat. So, which is a whole discussion in its own right, what he means by that. But for whatever the reason, we find other Gemaras that Dvarim isn't on, which we discussed once, you know, in great detail, which leads to the question whether the book of Dvarim is on the same level status as the other four books. Because the Vilna Gaon claims, based on the Gemara Megillah, that Dvarim is on a lower level of prophecy. Because it's a Gemara which says at the end of Maseches Megillah that it talks about the Tochacha. We just read one of them. You read it twice. Bichukosai. We read it right before the holiday of Shavuos, and we read it right before the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says Ein Mafsikin Bekolos. When you read about the curses, don't break them up. Meaning, like on Shabbos, we call up more than 7 people, minimum 7. But we always, you know, Simchas, you call up people, Bar Mitzvahs. So it says when you come to the Tocha, the portion of rebuke, don't break it up. Don't, because then you, because why? It's different reasons. One is because you don't want to put the pause button when God's in the middle of rebuking you, or because we don't want to add, if you call up new people, so every person makes a new bracha. We don't want to add blessing to something which is rebuke, you know, punishment and sadness. So either way, so the Gemara says, so I think it's Abaye, but the Abaye says, when is this true? That you don't have to, that you can't break up the Tochacha. This is only true when is in the one in Torah's Kohanim, and the one in Vayikra, in Parashas Bechukosai. However, the one in Mishnah Torah, that you can break up. So the Gemara says, why my time, or why are you discriminating? So the Gemara has a very interesting language. It says something along the lines is that, that's because Vayikra was given directly, you know, motion with Pi Hashchina. But Dvarim, I don't have to see the exact question of the Gemara, but the Gemara says, but Dvarim, that was written Moshe. And, you know, Moshe not on his own, but Moshe through his own Nevuah. So based on this Gemara, the Vilna Gaon learns, and that works along with this Rav Sajagon, that he says Dvarim's on a lower level, that the Book of Dvarim, you know, when we get to Dvarim, we could give a whole discussion on that, but the Book of Dvarim is on a lower level. So that's what they point out here, that, so you had the Pshat of Rashi about Ein Zeh Mekomo with the inverted nuns, and we have the Gemara saying a totally different explanation. The Gemara is a totally different explanation of that it's teaching me it's a whole new book. It's the seventh book of Moses, And that's why we have 7 books, the 85 letters we learn now. And that's why with the Get, the 12 lines or the 16, they compare the Sefer, the portion of the Get to the portion of the Sefer Torah, the both books. And therefore, they learn out that the 12 lines and the Get on that. But those are some halacha. I know it's late. I don't know if you want to just call it here, or how late do you want to? Could be started late, so I don't want to keep us. Or
could you just stop for a second? I sort of lost you along the way somewhere. Where did we get into the discussion of the Get?
The Get was that we were talking about the. We were talking about that the inverted right.
Some of the 4 spaces between all the books, including the Devarim.
Right, that's where it came. So I'm saying the.
You have 12 spaces. You have. I'm sorry.
4 lines. 12. 3 times
4. 4 times 4. 16 spaces.
Right. That's what. So right. It's 6 to the F. Right. So the question. So
where are you getting into the 12 lines of the Get? The Get. What 12 lines are you referring to in the Get?
No, that's another. When you're right, when someone gets divorced, there's an official document on a clock, they write it out. It's
12
right. The meaning is 12.
I don't know about that.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Right. Hopefully, it'll just be a idea.
So that's 12, and we're talking about 16.
No, right. That's the luck is it's 12. So Tosis says gives 2 reasons.
You know the Devarim, and then you have 12.
Right. 2 reasons. So 1 reason is get the number Gimel and Tes. So then Rav Sajigon writes a strange reason. He says, he compares, because it says Sefer Krisus and Sefer Torah. So he says, this I get the 4 empty lines between each of the books. So therefore, that's where you get the 12 lines. But the question is, that should be 16 lines then, not 12, because if you...
Right.
So then we explain that the gap between Bamidbar and Dvarim doesn't count because it's a repeat. So I was just explaining that then the Dvarim, some people say it was on a lower level of... A low level of prophecy. That's why Devarim would be different. And
there is, in fact, a gap physically, materially. There's a gap
between Bamidbar and Devarim. Yeah,
there is.
Right.
It's not counting.
Right.
It doesn't have the status of
right.
The other set.
Right.
I wasn't sure about that.
Right. That's
the. Do you know what Get is 12 lines?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. Don't ask me.
I'm not.
Right, so that's how they point out also that was the difference that's along the lines they explain the difference between because the end of the parasha talks about the story with Miriam that with when they spoke leprosy about their brother Moshe and Aaron got together and they were so from here from this story is the source actually of how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, because Rambam Maimonides in his 13 tenets of faith,
I'll have a question.
Right, and he brings down that one of the 13 tenets of faith is that you have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is of HaNevi'im, is the father of all Nevi'im. In other words, every Jew has to, and father doesn't mean first, because we know many people came before him. Father means that we have to believe he is the highest level of prophecy. And for obvious reasons, what the Rambam is basically ensuring is that the Torah can never be changed. That's the contrast between Judaism and all of the other religions. Basically, they all basically agree there was a revelation at Sinai and Moshe Rabbeinu was it. But they just claim that whoever it was, Muhammad, whoever came afterwards, they came down and they told him, forget about what Moshe said, this is what. So that could work if you have the premise that no one could be greater than Moshe, so everything's irrelevant. That's how the Kuzari points out that the greatness of Judaism over all the other religions is this, that by Judaism the revelation was given from the 2 million people. At Har Sinai, there are 2 million people there, and the Jews are very skeptical people. To have the same people saying over the same story. Every other religion is based on it's based on one person allegedly getting a prophecy. Whoever that one person might be, God, they give a story, a parable. They say it's like one was the Hasidic Rebbe. He died and he left 2 kids, and they were fighting over who was going to take over, who was going to get the Rabbanis. So, you know, it's a whole big fight. So what happens? So one morning, one of the kids wakes up and says, you know what? It's all settled. Daddy came down to me in the dream and said, I'm it. He said, the guy said, that's great, but if Daddy wanted me to know, I think he would have told me. It's the same thing with that if God wanted us to know that he changed his mind, he'd have to tell everyone else, not just you. But the same, but so when they get into the difference of these, by Moshe Rabbeinu, that, because Moshe Rabbeinu was unique in the fact that he wasn't living with his wife, because he was in a pal daber, even Miriam and Aaron, who were in the Nevi'im and great people, they didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Av HaNevi'im, was the father of all Nevi'im. And that's why we have a Navi, Rosh HaChadosh Dov HaMe'ata. We have a principle, a Navi can't introduce any new laws, any Navi, because Moshe Rabbeinu, we assume, is the Av HaNevi'im, and that's why, and that ensures that the Torah is eternal, can never be changed. And that's the difference between, even though we have the 24 books of Tanakh, but there's a big difference between Torah, the Torah part, versus Nevi'im and Ksuvim. In other words, it's clear what, the first five books are word for word dictated from God to Moshe. But what isn't so clear is the difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim. What exactly is, because we find, in fact, Rus we just read, we find many books with the same author. Let's say wrote Rus. So you have Shmuel wrote his own book, Shmuel. That made the book of Navi. That made Nach. But yet his other book only made Rus. So how could you have the same author and yet one of his book made the cut into prophets and his other book made it into writing? So the many answers. One answer they give is the difference is the Rambam writes the Mor and the Vuchim. The Rambam writes this distinction. He says that basically that Nevuah was given on the different levels of Nevuah, whatever it means exactly, but the books that made the book of prophets were given on what he calls Nevuah prophecy, but the books of Ksuvim were given on a lower level, which what he calls Ruach HaKodesh, with divine inspiration, you know, whatever they mean exactly, but what's clear is divine inspiration is a lower level than Nevuah. So he said the Rambam's definition is, it all depends on the nature of the prophecy he got at the time. So therefore, the prophet got a higher level of prophecy, therefore that made the book of the Nevi'im. But if he had a lower level of prophecy, and you could have the same person, as we see, even Moshe Rabbeinu, not every prophecy you got was always equal. In other words, not everything Moshe got is Torah. There are many things that Moshe got that he made takanas drabanan. In other words, we believe the Chamish Echum that he got on a certain level, but doesn't mean Moshe could have got things which isn't. Not all Nevi'im, as we see by Elio, different people had different books. And that's how Rav Chaim Soloveitchik explains that we have the concept. Other explain that the book of, what's the difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim? Nevi'im is Niv Sifasayim, which means the utterance of the lips. And Ksuvim is known as the book, the Ksuvim writing. So he says the difference is like this, that the book of Nevi'im is, how was it given? Omer v'kosev. It was first, God gave it to the Navi gave it over to the people, and then it was written down. But Ksuvim is, God gave the prophecy to the Navi wrote it down, and then afterwards he said it over. And we see he brings the proof in the Gemara that we see, apparently, that the oral transmissions on a higher level, that the Navi was first, gave it over orally, and then he wrote it down. That's how it gets into the transmission of oral law, that we see that the oral law, which is, I was going to go into detail, but we're not going to have time tonight, but the oral law, why originally, even though now it's written down, we have all these Gemaras and all the books, but in theory it was supposed to remain oral. So orally was, in other words, and that's how they point out that's when that became the lower level. We have, I'll come back to it and go into more detail, but the bottom line of it is that why can't we can't argue on the Chachmei Gemara anymore. Today, we read the Gemara, I go, if the Gemara doesn't know what it's talking about, I'm going to say this. In other words, I could say it about the Rambam, it might not be prudent or smart, but I could say it about Rashi, Rambam, I could say they made a mistake. In other words, I could say, I say differently. I can't argue on, as the Rama writes this in Shulchan Aruch, that anyone who came before the Gemara could argue with each other. They have a right to discuss their issue. But anyone who came after the Gemara, So anyone after the Gemara could argue with each other also, but the people who came after the Gemara can't argue with the people who came before. So what exactly is the cutoff? Like, why is that picked? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik pointed out along these lines. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, that's the Rav Soloveitchik's father, the one Rabbi Green's Rebbe, his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, he pointed out that there's a, one is not supposed to write down the oral law, except we had no choice. God had to put it down because it would have been, we would have been forgotten. We went into exile, we wouldn't have had anything, so better have it written down, have something. So the question is, we know Rabbi Yehudah Hanasi wrote the Mishnah, and he codified it. But then the Gemara came afterwards. So it was already, Rebbe's Mishnah was already written down, but they still had, the Gemara was still oral. So the question is, when did they start learning the Mishnayos in print? Did they already, once Rebbe wrote it down, did they start writing it down, learning like with the Mishnah in front of them, or no? They just had it written down, but they still learned it orally. It wasn't until after the Gemara was also put into print, that's when they stopped doing it orally. In other words, did they stop? So he quotes from one in the Gonim, Rav Sharia Gon, that he thinks it's the second one. They didn't start learning even the Mishnayos or reading it from a text until after the Gemara also was put into a text. So what Rav Moshe Soloveitchik explains is, what? Why don't we have a right to argue with the Chachmei HaGemara anymore? Like, as Rav Yisrael Salanta put it, the Gemara is almost, in a certain level, it's like the Torah Shebeksav, not in terms of authenticity, but in terms of that, just like we can't argue on a Pusik in Chumash, today our hands are tied. That's why Rebbe didn't want to do it. He wanted to keep the flexibility. He had no choice, but he had to put it down into print, so we can't argue on the Gemara. Why is the Gemara the cutoff point? The Rav Moshe Soloveitchik says because it was the end of the transmission of the oral law orally. That was, up until now, it was the ideal, the oral law orally, which, you know, we could go into what that meant exactly. But after this point, the oral law continued, but we started learning the oral law biksav, which is a much lower, it's a lower level transmission. So therefore, we don't have a right. We have a lower level transmission. We can't argue on the people. We don't have the same type of Masorah anymore. Everyone beforehand could argue with each other. They have the same, it was oral law orally. But here, once it became oral law written, so again, the same type of concept that they write by Ksuvim, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, that we see Nevi'im's on a higher level because it was orally given over and then written down. But Ksuvim is on a lower level because it was written down and orally given over. That's how they explain it. So the Torah is clear as Moshe Rabbeinu v'Pi'a Gvura, word for word. And differences between the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, then it's different, there's some literary differences, but the Abar Benel also has a whole long discussion about why some books made Nevi'im. He totally disagrees with the Rambam completely, and he gives a whole different explanation. You got a question?
Well, now there's a different question. I mean, more of a comment than a question, there is a question to it, which is, if you're passing something orally, the presence is everything. You have to be there to. If you're passing something with a text, then there's the possibility of absence. In other words, you're alone reading it. Or there's still the possibility that your Mora is with you. So, but the text, the written text, which was once a verbal text, which was an oral text, becomes a secondary thing. It becomes a crutch. In the best situation.
Right, it can be very ambiguous what exactly is, right, what do you, and that's, right, that's why today, that's what you had after them, you have all Rambam, Rashi, that's, everyone has a discussion, what exactly, in other words, they have all what the interpretation, what the Gemara means, that's all the Rishonim are doing, is trying to, when you have a Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos, is usually what does the Gemara mean, so they can't say the Gemara is wrong, they're just telling you, this is what we think, is what we think the Gemara means. Right, that's why they want, in terms of, loses its clarity, in terms of now that, as you said, secondary, right, that in terms of, that was a big, right, besides a major thing I can't go into now, but it lost its flexibility, which is a tremendous thing in terms of each based and looking at something and passing, right, the way they feel.
You can conjecture that when it's being passed.
You are part of that creative Misora. Yeah. Now we do have creative, but it's much more limited.
Right.
Right, and that was just, that's why Rebbe didn't want to, he was very reluctant to do it, but he had no, his hand, you know, his hands were tied. In fact, one, some say interesting, the reason why he put it into print then is there was also a concern, as we're saying, if there's an oral one, there's creativity, but the problem is if it falls into the wrong hands, so he felt there was a lot of secular things coming into, he sensed it was a weakening of times, and he didn't want it to get poisoned either. So it was a double. On one hand, there's tremendous creativity, and it's great. Other than you have to have the right people passing it over, because if you have the wrong people passing it over, you'll end up also, as I say, so both sides of those coins they have, right, very good.
But at the same time, I mean, if it's always going to be passed in the presence, in other words, there's going to be a selection process, and the selection process is going to be part of the process of learning.
Right.
In other words, as you take on students, you gauge the way they speak and how they interpret that, and then you exclude them or you include them, or you include what you want to include, you exclude what you want to exclude, as part of the teaching and learning process.
Right. That's the whole Gemara, going back and reaching, right. Yeah. The whole thing about the oral was the process, you know, that, you know, when people see the halacha, they just see this the dry, this is the psak, but they don't, if you don't know all the Gemaras, and you have to know all the reasoning behind it and the back and forth, you know, how they rejected, how they got to there.
So I heard someone say that the art scroll translation was a further step, because now you
translation can read, of the Gemara, you mean?
Yeah, because now you can read it by yourself, you don't need a Mora anymore. Is it even more dangerous?
No, right, in that sense, and it's right, this gives you, all it did is level the playing field, so to speak, with the English speaking crowd. I'm just saying the same, right? Exactly, a friend. I'm just saying, right?
And from
right up until now, the assumption was whoever knew the original text, you know, had a certain other. Right now, right? That's what I'm saying. But in terms of, it's always right. It's always that way. But then, the potential for grade is much better. Right.
Does the shul have the 6 and 7 books of the Chumash?
The which one?
The 6 and 7 books of Moses.
It's in this week's parsha. Yeah, I'm saying I'll show it to you when we go have a chumash. I'm saying it's in parsha's Bahaloska this week.
Really?
Oh. The inverted nuns are in there. I'm saying it's the same. It's no different. But you say the Chamish, the 5 books or 7 books, it's the same. It's the same exact words. It's a matter of whether you consider them 2 extra books or not. The actual, there's no different than the actual nevuah or words. Everything's exactly the same. It's just a matter of the technical issue whether you call it 7 books or 5.
The other day I was doing a search on the internet on Amazon.ca, and then there was this book that popped up, and it says the 6 and 7 books of Moses. I said, what?
I'm not sure. It's a good question. What they mean? I don't know if they meant this.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's. I think the author was.
No, it sounds like some Christian thing, maybe.
No, it's
a Jewish thing.
Jewish author.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he means, unless.
Yeah, it wasn't expensive.
No, right. He wasn't referring to this.
Yeah.
Unless I don't think so, he wouldn't have a whole book on it. I'm just saying, I don't know.
I've never heard of the 67 book, so I just surprised you. Is this something new?
No, the Gemara talks about it, it's not new.
So in the Gemara, Amoraim can't argue with Tanayim, but that's like more like how we don't argue with Rambam, or is that more like how we don't argue with the Gemara?
No, but that, actually, that was, that's how I was going to give the whole shiur on tonight, but I didn't have what I'm saying, but strictly speaking, Amoraim can argue on Tanayim. In other words, even though everyone can. I don't want to. I could give a whole class. I don't want to. I'm the same. But even though we always assume that they can't. In other words, that we rabbis in the Talmud can't argue on the Mishnah, but it's not true. I mean, according to the case of Mishnah writes, it was a minhag that way. But strictly, I'll even prove it to you is that not only can they, but we even paskin like them. There's a Gemara in Ksuvos where Rav, who's an Amor, arguing on the Tanaim, and be passing like Rav. But I'll discuss that.
Okay.
Have a good job.
What a
I hope I didn't disrupt the lecture.
No, that was fine.
Okay.
Yeah, how are you going?